Now, what we're going to speak about tonight, the first part, I don't know if we've spoken about in the past. The second part, we certainly have. But it's such an important point, and one of my favorites, so I'm repeating it intentionally. Okay. The first part we definitely have now. Any of you learn the Daf Yomi? Okay. The Daf Yomi had a halacha that was... You can take over here. We give you table seats here. Okay. Lots of times we underestimate how important tefillah is and how powerful tefillah is. And I wanted to spend the beginning, before we go into the other thing that I wanted to discuss, about tefillah. There's an unbelievable Ramban, and you see what the Ramban says and how he says it, and it really conveys a very loud, clear point. Are those too close?
Maybe.
Vayomer Moshe al Hashem, Be Hashem, lo ish dvarim anochi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm not an orator. I don't know how to present something and articulate it in a sophisticated manner and in an articulate way. I can't organize it in a way that it will be heard by the common folk. And just parenthetically, the Maimarim says a beautiful pshat. Once you hear it, it's not far from Pasha Pshat. He says, we always think of it just as a lisp, and you know, yeah, there was more to it than just, you know, that he had a lisp because of the gold, the medrash. That's the medrash's mahal, but there's more to it. Maimarim says that really to be able to speak and to be able to articulate thoughts has a lot to do with being able to make things understood. Now, some people can only make very simple things be understood. Reb Chaim, it's known in Brisk, they were very much into this, that it was felt in Hasbara, felt in Havana, that anything that you really understand, you should be able to break down. But that's to a certain level. If somebody is learning very deep Kabbalah, try to explain it to us, it's very, very difficult. We don't have the same set of knowledge or of understanding. It's like a different frequency. I know I sometimes look at certain Sfarim and Machshava, I'm just not getting it. It just doesn't add up. I hear what they're saying, it just doesn't go. Because in the way I was taught to learn, I don't have a broad enough appreciation for that school, for that style. Moshe Rabbeinu learned from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in Shemayim, 40 days, 40 nights, Lechem Lechalti, Mayim L'Shasisi. He was learning on a completely different level. For him to be able to articulate the thoughts that were going on in his head and the feelings that he was having to a regular person was a very difficult thing. And that's, maybe it was a physical stutter then, or maybe it was a physical impediment, but that impediment came from trying to take such surreal ideas and materialize it into regular words. So Moshe Rabbeinu tells him, I'm not an orator. So Ramban understands that there obviously was some type of speech impediment, or at least he wasn't an orator. So the Ramban asks a very simple question. Instead of telling Hashem, I can't go because I'm not an orator, why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu just tell him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, can you please heal my speech impediment? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you want me to be your representative, fine. But I'm asking you a Torah. Davening, Refeinu Hashem v'nei Rafe, please send me a refuah and heal my speech impediment. It's no big deal. So what do you think the reason is?
He didn't want it. He was
alone. Excellent. Zok de Ramban. V'hine, Moshe m'roiv cheftzei shloyolech lehispal lefanu yisbarach shiasa kvei nispah. He wasn't interested in it, so he didn't ask for it to be taken away. But now the Ramban asks another question. Okay, fine. So that's why he didn't ask for it. But what Maisa does make sense. He wasn't saying shtusim. Makes sense that the representative of the king, especially if you're going to be going to speak to the king always, you should be a good orator. It definitely will be more covered for Klal Yisrael, for Hashem, for everything, that his spokesman is a good spokesman. So why HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to send them on this mission? HaKadosh Baruch Hu should have just healed it.
He was waiting for him to die.
Zak, very good, Zak de Ramban. VaHaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Hashem, it's such an important lesson for us. Listen to the language. Kivin Shaloi Hispalel Bekach, since Moshe Rabbeinu didn't daven for it, Loi Ratzel Rapaisai, he did not want to heal him. Lahavdil, a way for us to relate it, to it sometimes. You might have a candy that you want to give to a child. Imagine your own child, hopefully you shouldn't give candy. You want to give him a carrot stick. Yeah, good luck. You want to give him a candy. But you want to teach him that you say please, you say thank you. That's the way we talk. He sees that you have a lollipop. Can I have the lolly? How do we ask? And he starts like shrugging and burying his head in his shirt and so on and so forth. I'll give you the lollipop, but you have to ask nicely. What do we say? Lots of times child will say, please. And you just want him, sometimes you want him just to relate to you. Sometimes, come here and you'll get a lolly. No, I don't want to go there. So then you won't get a lolly. Why? Because this is the way it works. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm not changing the world for you. The way I set up the world is you want something, you ask for it. You say, please. But I'm shy. You could have whatever reason. You don't want the candy, that's fine. But don't think that it will go without asking for it. So now right away the Yetzer Hara popped up in most of our minds. I know some people that daven like nothing. They don't daven at all and they get things. You never know what the cost is. We don't know how much Olam Haba a person could be giving up for Olam Hazeh. When we're davening for things, we're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Matnas Chinam. We're not asking him, Hashem, please give me Parnasa and just take off 10% from my account in Olam Haba. We don't want to take off one iota of Olam Haba. We're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please take care of the business account and make sure that my Parnasa is okay so I could serve you. We want it all derech tefillah. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't holding by giving up Olam Haba. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't take away his Olam Haba to do this. How am I to give it to him just like this? Now that you have to ask. You want me to give you something, you have to ask. That is the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu set it up. Now, if there's anybody in this room that is completely taken care of and doesn't need to daven for anything, doesn't need anything from Hashem, raise your hand. The rest of us, we have to daven. If there's something that we need, and most of us have many things that we need, many areas that we want Hatzlacha, some areas where we need Yeshua. Like HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you want it, fine. But this is the way to get it. V'kivan shaloi hispalo, since he did not HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kimshlo Yispal Dekach, since Moshe Rabbeinu did not daven for it, Leirotza Lerapaisei. He did not want to heal. I think it's unbelievable. Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest. Hashem says, you're not asking, I do not want to heal. It's better for everybody. Everything. It's true. You're not asking. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu didn't ask. He didn't want it. They're on the same, both of them, meaning Moshe Rabbeinu understands that that's the way the world works. It wasn't like us that we think, oh yeah, well, what's the big deal? Now, I'm just going to add to that caveat. Sometimes the child finally will give in and go, please. And sometimes you really want to give it, and you look for that to be your way out. Like, okay, fine, now I have an excuse that I could give it. I wasn't sure what I was going to do. Baruch Hashem, at least he said the word halfway. Sometimes, if you're a good parent, yeah, that's not the way you talk. The way it is. So I get nervous with tefillah, the same thing. We have to say please, but we have to say please like a match. Now, does it have to be that the child is thinking so deep? No, we just say please. So do we have to be on the level that we're davening with who knows what type of kavanas? No. How have I? But just at least say the words. Say the words basically. There is a clear-cut theory. I don't know exactly how to word the theory and the name of the theory, but I have a scientific theory that there is an inverse relationship with the amount of time it takes a person to daven quietly versus the amount of time it takes them to daven aloud. People that take more time daven quietly are able to daven quicker aloud. And people that daven quicker quietly take longer aloud. You know what I'm talking about? There's some people you'll see, they could daven very quickly, they're always done right away. They get up to say Chazaras Hashatz.
They struggle.
Their teeth all over the pavement. And some people don't daven as quickly, they get up Chazaras Hashatz, they go straight through it. Why? Because they said the words. Something to realize. So I'll just share with you a halacha. And this has to do with the Daf Yomi last week. Blew my mind, this halacha. I don't think I was aware of this halacha. I certainly wasn't aware of the reason. I didn't remember the reason. Unbelievable halacha. The rule of thumb is, there's something called kablanas and chakiras. Basically, kablanas is, this is kablanas. You give me a field, and we make up. I'll give you 20 bushels a year. Make up, I'm going to give you 20 bushels of wheat a year. Now, what happens if it's a field, 10 acres, 20 bushels of wheat is what I'm going to owe you, the rest I get. So, obviously, if it's a regular year, I made 50 bushels, I get 30 bushels. I made 40 bushels, I only get 20. I made 60 bushels, I get 40. The better I do or the worse I do is all my gain. That's the way kablanis works. Chakiris works in percentage. But kablanis works, I'm giving you a flat fee. You want to be guaranteed you're going to get a certain amount from this field. And the rest, adorable. You want to work hard, great. Make more money. It's less risk, you know, the safer bet, basically. What happens, though, even in kablanas? What happens if there's a drought? So you had this field in Georgia, and the whole Georgia, or that whole valley, that whole area, had a storm or had a drought or whatever it was. And most of the fields got ruined. So then, what is the normal yield? If the normal yield is only 60%, or 50%, let's say, so then I only owe you 10 bushels of wheat. I have a valid taina that, yes, 20 was based on normal yield. It was a drought this year. Because of that, the fields were only yielding 50%. So I only owe you, for kablanas, 50%. That is a valid taina. What happens if we had discussed that I was going to be planting wheat. And I ended up planting barley. And I did very well with barley. I realized barley's making more money. You know, not long ago, I was speaking to somebody from California. He explained that all in Northern California, you know, the San Francisco area, or even more east, like Sacramento area, where they used to have prunes and berries and all these type of things. Now everybody's going over to hazelnuts. Because hazelnuts makes more money. They figured out that hazelnuts makes more money, whatever the cheshbon is. So this guy decided, you know what, instead of wheat, I'm going to do barley. He still gives you the 20 bushels of wheat. And he's okay. As long as he's not damaging the field more, that's a separate discussion. So he might have made twice as much. Doesn't make a difference. He has to get you. He'll have to go to the store, buy 20 bushels of wheat, and give you 20 bushels of wheat. What happens if he got the field from you for, and the deal was for wheat, he was going to give you 20 bushels a week. Then he heard barley's doing great. He said he's doing barley. And then there was a drought. And most of the fields in the valley got ruined. They only did 50% yield. And he's also only did 50, whatever, he did a lot less. So he comes and he says, you know, I'm only going to give you 10 bushels of wheat because there was only 50% yield. Shulchan Aruch paskins that you have a right to tell him you want 20 bushels of wheat. Now, if you were following the conversation, it doesn't make any sense. Right? Always you're able to tie now. Right. So what's the reason? Listen to... What did you say?
Everybody was in business. Was in business. Spoke about this Gemara last week.
Why?
Because of what you're going to say now. I don't know.
Oh, who did you hear it from?
My partner.
He might have heard it.
He goes to Dr. Yom in the Gemara in the morning.
Okay, unbelievable. Hisna love Baal Karka, she's her Enechitim, Vizor Sairim, Osha Loizor Aklau, Osha Zor of Letzamcha, Alpha Pisha Bochagav, Osha Dauphin, Vukarova Medina, Enem Nakla Machakira. Even if a drought happens or locust comes or whatever it is, in that case, it was supposed to be a wheat field. I switched it to a barley field. I'm not able to deduct. Why not? Zak deshach. It's the Sma. Diyachol Hamaskir Loimer, and this is based on Rashi, because the renter, he rented it to me, can say, Iluloshinis, had you not switched it to barley, Hashem would have listened to my tefillos. I had no idea you switched to barley. I thought you were planting wheat. I was davening for wheat. I was davening that the wheat field should do well, everything should go well, and I should make my money. I had no idea you switched to barley. Bezdin? Had you come to me 2 weeks ago, I would have said, you know, very nice that you think you have such a kaychat tefillah, maybe you should become a rebbe or something. We're talking cheshem rishpat here. Bottom line, there's 50% yield in the valley. You're only getting 10 bushels. I was davening for wheat. Okay, davening's nice, but we're talking halacha. We're talking bottom line, court. This is not, you know, when we go to shul, you could give me a drasha about your tefillah, that's fine. No, in halacha, in court, in Bezdin will say, no, chalap, you got to pay him another 10 bushels. Why? Because his tefillah might have worked. Come on. Unbelievable. Okay, now to the second part. Let me close the page. Now, I quote from my Rebbe Reb David Hirsch from time to time. And Rav David Hirsch was a very unique person. He grew up in Williamsburg. He became a big Talmud of Rav Shneur Kotler. He was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He knew a tremendous amount of Lamdas and Yeshivish Raid and Halacha, tremendous Bal Halacha, and knew a lot of Machshava. He knew a lot of Litvish Musar, Hasidish Musar, you name it, he knew it. And from all the presentations I heard from him, one of the best, if not the best, if you want vintage Rav David Hirsch, this was vintage Rav David Hirsch. And Rav David Hirsch had a way of getting you exactly where he wanted you. This I did not hear from him when I was learning in Stanford. After I'd left Stanford, I was learning in Brisk, and he had a bris in Eretz Yisrael, his Einikel's bris. So he had come to Eretz Yisrael, and the word got out to the Talmidim that were learning in Eretz Yisrael, Rav David Hirsch, here Matzei Shabbos, we could come for a shmos. So we went to his son's house, probably 30 chevra, whatever it was. Now, remember, Rav David Hirsch was mashkiach in a Litvish yeshiva, and he wore a shaymel, and he had gekrazta peis, he had curly peis. Not your typical, like people would walk into yeshiva like, what's going on here? It's a bunch of Litvish bachrim, and this is their mashkiach. It was very interesting. So Rav David Hirsch said the following. He said, Amol given the Rebbe Rabinim. It was a Rebbe Rabinim of Pshischa, Grace Rebbe. So the Rebbe Rabinim said that when he was a younger man, he was much younger, he had the ability to bring Mashiach, to end the whole Golos and bring Mashiach. He was able to do it. But he decided that he wasn't going to do it. He decided against it. That's why we're still in Golos. Because Rabbanim didn't bring Mashiach. He had the kayach to bring Mashiach, and he decided against it. He didn't bring Mashiach, and that's what's going on now. Why didn't he bring Mashiach? Because in times of Rabbanim, the zaking by the Hasidim was the Oyev Yisrael. Oyev Yisrael was the Abderav. You heard of the Abderav. Abderav promoted a tremendous amount of Abbas Yisrael. The name of the sefer is Oyev Yisrael. Something that comes to mind, somebody once came over to him and said, you know, every parasha, you always say, Avos Yisrael, Avos Yisrael, Avos Yisrael. Not everything has to do with Avos Yisrael. He said, what are you talking about? Everything has to do with Avos Yisrael. He said, yeah, what do you do with Parshas Balak? What does Balak have to do with Avos Yisrael? So he said, what do you mean? It's a Rosh HaTevis. V'ahavta l'reyacha k'moicha. He said, huh? V'ahavta is with a vav, not with a vase. Kamoich is with a chaf, not with a kuf. Ayev Yisrael told him, oh, that's where you're making the mistake. If you're going to be so careful with everything, you'll never have Avos Yisrael. So Ayev Yisrael was a tremendous tzaddik, a tremendous gain, and he was the elder of the dar. So Rabbanim said, here I was a young Chassidish younger man. And I thought I had the ability to bring Mashiach. But I was thinking, imagine, Mashiach's going to come. Going to have this big Levyasantish. It's going to go miles, and the people, you'll have, you know, the paranshkas, the bleachers on both sides. It's going to be who knows what size tent, and it's going to be unbelievable. And the fish is going to be, the shirayim is going to take who knows how long. And then they're going to start singing Zemiris. It's going to be, you know, who knows what psukim they'll have to sing Zemiris about. It's going to be a hollow like you never heard. And he's going to start singing a shtickel terror. Everybody's going to want to hear Mashiach's shtickel terror. It's going to be going for hours and hours and hours. And finally, somebody's going to have the opportunity. You're going to gather together the courage and say, no, Mashiach, 1900 years, 1800 plus years, you didn't come. We were going Gaulis from one to the next, Spanish Inquisition, Crusades, Cossacks, before that the Middle Ages, we went through everything. You never came. Suddenly, this generation, you came. Who brought you? And everybody's going to expect him to say, the Ohev Yisrael, with his Ahavas Yisrael, the amount he promoted Ahavas Yisrael, he's the one that brought me. But instead of saying that, he's going to like tell the Machleg and point down like a quarter mile down the Tish. And he'll say, you see that Yingaman over there, Simcha? Simcha Binim? Ed Megabracht, he's the one that brought me. And it's going to be embarrassing for the Ohev Yisrael. So that's why I didn't bring Mashiach. We looked at Reb David Hirsch like he was crazy. You came from Eretz Yisrael, this is the best shmooze you could give. And like right away in your mind, especially if you're out for a year and a half already, you start thinking in your mind, like, maybe I was like building in my imagination that he was such a good Mashiach. You really, this is crazy stuff. This is not, you know. He says, I want to tell you another story. Story one, tell you another story. It's Mitzvah Shabbos, tell you another story. Okay, let's see the next story. It says, Klal Yisrael were suffering terrible bloodbaths. Melech Mitzrayim was literally shechting Giddish and kids and bathing in their blood every day. People were being killed left and right. There were edicts against the Jews like crazy. The Ruchnius of the Jews, forget about it. It was almost at the point of no return. It was almost gone. Hashem comes himself, not Ruach HaKadosh, he sees he's able to. Hashem comes himself to Moshe Rabbeinu and says, Moshe, I'm going to end this galus. Klal Yisrael's finally out. I want you to go take them. Moshe Rabbeinu says, no. What do you mean, no? To quote Reb David Hirsch with his shamel, with his payas. Nine, chkanished. I can't do it. Why not? Aaron's going to feel bad. He comes back to him the next day. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu, get them out. I'm hearing the tzakas b'nei Yisrael, boy, like, it's coming. You have no idea the oppression that they're suffering. Aaron's going to feel bad. Until the seventh day, Hashem finally tells him, you have no choice, you have to take them out. And then he tells him, Aaron's not going to feel bad. Until that point, Moshe Rabbeinu did not agree. This is not some wild medrash. This is Chumash Rashi. Vayomer Moshe al Hashem. Moshe said to Hashem, Be Hashem. Lo ish dvarim anoichi. I'm not a man of words. Gamit mol gamit shilshoim. We just had the Ramban. The Ramban says he didn't daven. Why? Because he didn't want to be told otherwise. Why is he arguing? Gamit mol gamit shilshoim. Rashi points out, Tmol shilshoim gam. It means for 6 days he was going on with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why didn't he want to? Zatrashi. For 6 days he didn't do it, and now it's finally the seventh day when Hashem finally got upset and told him you have to do it. What was all this because of? He didn't want to take the gedula before his brother. Come on. You got a ganz Klal Yisrael over here. Aaron's going to feel it. Grow up. He says, Aaron was older than him. Aaron was known as a Navi. So therefore, he wasn't going to do it. He said, I told you the first story. You thought I lost my marbles. You thought I was crazy. This is Chumash and Rashi. I'm not telling you anything fancy. This is more absurd. Hashem is coming to him, telling him, take him out. Not he has the ability to do it. Hashem is coming. No, sorry. What are you talking about? Aaron's going to feel bad. I can't do it. What's pshat? So first I'll tell you what he said, and then we'll add to it a little bit from the Memara. So David Hirsch said, the message is the message. You don't hurt people. Moshe Rabbeinu realized, yes, I could bring a geula and everything. Hashem, you'll have to work it out. I'm not hurting somebody. And I imagine he understood that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was testing him. And probably had he not passed this test, he wouldn't have been worthy of being the geula. Hashem wanted to see, what type of individual are you? Are you somebody that will hurt somebody? Can I convince you to hurt somebody? He said, sorry, I'm not going to. What's going to be with Klal Yisrael? Speak to God. You're the Eibishter, I don't know. Figure something out. I can't help you. You know, somebody comes and tells you that they have to save world Jewry, they can do it, they need you to give them $100 million. Today, cash. What will you tell them? You know, $100 million. Now it's going to save world Jewry.
I don't
care, I need it. I would say, I can't. I'm sorry, I can't. I'll try to put together $1,000 if it will save world Jewry. I can't give you $100 million. I can't do it. Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, I can't hurt somebody. I can't. I can't hurt my brother. I'm not going to do it. What's going to be with Gaulis? It's a good question. Let's work on it. This is not an option. I cannot hurt somebody. A tremendous, tremendous aside. It's so important because we live in a world where the bottom line really speaks to us and convinces us to do what we have to do. Well, we got to take care of it. I am going to hurt somebody. It's the cost of doing business. Moshe Rabbeinu is willing to give everything up in order not to hurt. Now we'll just add something from the Maimarim. The Maimarim says that really you find this idea by Tamar also. Tamar Chazal tell us knew that David and Mashiach were going to come out of her. She was pregnant already with what would become the predecessor of David HaMelech, Malchus Beis David, and Mashiach Tzidkenu B'Mehreh V'Yameinu. And she said, when she was caught, it's you over Sisarev, she said, I'm not going to call out Yehuda. But they might burn her. If he doesn't step up to admitting, and it was a tremendous thing, because I'll say you don't realize what Gevura it took from him to admit. And he had many frumer reasons not to admit. Because people will say, oh, that's what Yehuda is, and then the whole thing is a baloney. And he admitted. Had he not admitted, and she was really running a risk, that he might not admit, okay, so then they'll burn me. Okay, that's very nice. You want to be from, that's good. You want to die for this, that's great. But you're killing Klal Yisrael. You're not going to have Mashiach. You're not going to have David. How could she do it? So Maimarim says, a Yisayid, that she understood that Mashiach cannot come from hurting people. It's not just, I won't do it even though it's worth Mashiach. Mashiach doesn't come from hurting people. The real geula doesn't hurt people. If it's something that's hurting people, that's a fraud. You know, like, there are certain ways to tell whether gold is real gold or not gold. This is not real geula if it's hurting somebody. I see Mashiach's coming for me, I see David's coming for me. It cannot be hurting somebody. If it's hurting somebody, then it's not real. The same way we can explain this as well. Moshe Rabbeinu understood, if it's hurting somebody, this is not the geula that Klal Yisrael wants. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu ends up telling him. You're right. V'ro'acha v'samach b'libay. When Aaron will see you, he will be happy. He will not be upset. But the limud for us is a tremendous limud. How careful we have to be with other people's feelings. And even when sometimes we're convinced, but I have to do, I have to get things done, I have to save the world, and so on and so forth, it's not that much more than bringing the geula. And ultimately the geula that we daven for is a geula that comes without hurting people.
Good. Thank you very much for talking.